Strike Force's Pat Healy, and you're listening to Talking Broth.
Hello and welcome. I'm your host, Noel McGrath, along with a very special guest today, Mark Moyer. Mark, how's it going?
How are you, Noel?
Welcome to the premiere edition of the show. You might have heard my voice on talkingballs.net before, but I've decided to set up a new show because I believe that MMA in Ireland has not got the credit it deserves amongst the media, so we're trying to get it out there. Is that right, Mark?
You're damn right.
Obviously, a great weekend, Mark. UFC 148, what do you make of the whole card and how do you think it's gone down?
Well, it was conclusive to a certain extent, but to be honest with you, it's there's a lot of open-ended questions there still looming.
Definitely, I completely agree with you. Like, Sonnen, like, what was he thinking coming in with that spinning back fist?
Well, if he wanted to catch Anderson Silva with a surprise move, Kel Sonnen just doing a spinning back fist, that was it.
That's absolutely crazy. But okay, getting to today's show, we have top Strikeforce lightweight title contender Pat Bam Bam Healy. I caught up with him early today, myself and Mark caught up with him earlier today, and you know he's a big fight coming up this Saturday at Strikeforce Rockhull versus County at the Rose Garden Arena in Portland, Oregon. And also we caught up with Dan Stupp of MMA Junkie, who gave us a review of last weekend's action at UFC 148 and a preview of tomorrow's action, Munoz versus Weidman. Mark, what's your opinion? Let's get going on the weekend's action.
Okay.
Right, straight off from the get-go, did you watch the weigh-ins?
The weigh-ins were one of the most emotional
I've never seen anything like it in my life.
8,000 people screaming and roaring in front of a bunch of guys standing there malnourished and building up for a fight. It was absolutely bizarre. And when you saw someone like Kael Sonnen coming in there who was on the Dolce diet and he'd been 20 pounds under the night before and building up to it, Christ almighty, it was something to experience. It was a Vegas experience of UFC like you couldn't imagine.
I almost felt the weigh-in was more emotional, being a huge MMA fan and being a huge mixed martial arts fan. Sorry, I just said that twice, by the way. Being a huge UFC fan and MMA fan.
You can be both.
Of course you can. But I felt, you know, it was more emotional, really, the weigh-in, because you realised that the sport has grown so much. And people are copping on to how big it is. That was, in my eyes, and a lot of other people's eyes, obviously not the media in this country, because I won't class myself in their bracket, but a lot of the media in this country have put down this sport, and not one single newspaper in this country covered the weekend, like the biggest combat fight of the year.
Well, no, I think that they would have, if they'd actually bothered to look at it, they would have seen that
clearly.
That was Ali Frazier on a stage, the good guy versus the bad guy,
yeah.
And it was encapsulated there. Everyone cheering and roaring for their superhero, and everyone roaring and wanting the bad guy to die. and it was in its purest form, good versus evil, and that is the greatest story ever told, and that's what fight promotions are all about.
And there was a camera shot, especially it was from the opposite side of the weigh-ins, looking out to the crowd, and I think MMAfighting.com covered it as well from the opposite end. It was, you know, when you see that amount of people in an arena where was the weigh-in? It was one of the biggest, the Mandalay Bay event center, one of the biggest event centers in Las Vegas, where there's regularly fights on the whole time. And you see a crowd like this turn up. We knew this was going to be explosive.
Oh, it's rabid. It's rabid.
We knew. And then you have you're like breaking all sorts of records, obviously, with the gate and all. They took in over $7 million. Crazy, crazy promotion for a fight. It has to be go down as the biggest combat sports events of the year this year, definitely, in my eyes.
And absolutely, Noel. And in the fact that, like, Las Vegas, the authorities went to the UFC and asked them to organise an event. They wanted the Super Bowl of UFC. Mm. And that's what they got. This is the first weekend. UFC 148 was the first ever Super Bowl of the UFC.
Yeah.
This was their
definitely
MMA mania, if you will.
The whole international MMA week as well.
Exactly. Everything built up. They had parties built around it, all the ring card girls going around.
If you logged onto Twitter all week, you'd see where the guys were going all week, what hotels they'd be in, what resorts they'd be hanging out, signing autographs, the expo.
Exactly.
Everything. I had a friend over there this week who recently got married last week, and I've told you about that, obviously, Mark, as you know.
Blinding jealousy.
Big time, yeah, I'm not going to lie to you. He was at the fight on Saturday night, rang me numerous times, and we're talking, and I was watching it live here at like 5, 6 in the morning when at 3 o'clock it kicked off, but like, you know, Griffin comes on and I get a phone call. But, you know, that really, it sends shivers down my spine because I love this sport, and I know you love the sport as well, and to be involved, and you can feel the whole, if you're an MMA fan, you can feel the whole exuberance and aura around this event, and I guarantee I'll be there next year if the same week's going on. You know, it's incredible.
Yeah, to be honest, I'd rather watch it in Dublin, kind of crying under the bed like at 3 o'clock in the morning. You know, it just seems like more of a fun event here. You know, you don't have the same razzmatazz, but like, you know, it feels like there's something going on. But going on to it, the fact is that it was the biggest rematch of all time. Yeah. Like, you know, it was Ali Frazier, it was Cale Sonnen, Anderson Silva too. Christ, there must have been a part of you that wanted three.
And I stated on Twitter, you can follow me at Niall McGrath 4. Mark, have you got a Twitter handle?
I have. It's Mark Moriarty 101.
And I said on after the weigh-in, I said, this is the making. Obviously, your Forrest Griffin, Stephen Bonner, that's put the sport on the map. But this is, I think, is the defining moment that has grasped the sport and made it become the phenomenon that it is going to become. And it is clearly going to become the biggest sport in the world. Like, boxing, as much as I loved in the past, is a dying sport. And MMA has taken over, and I have a huge passion for him at the moment. So I think, you know, we're at that stage now. After this fight, I think Sonnen has to have utmost respect for what he's done to promote this fight. I think Silva's done very little to promote the fight. And Sonnen, you know, he obviously came out with the loss, but he's put this sport on a massive world map.
Absolutely not. In the last week, even if you saw in the American media, the fact is, although Fox failed to take up the countdown show and
ridiculous, put on UFC on Fuel, was on Fuel TV.
Well, yeah, we both had, like, you know, very strong feelings about that, and that was a huge, very serious issue. But the fact is that the media in America were both seriously interested in Cale Sonnen, and they understood that. They found him interesting as a character and wanted to hear what he had to say. Yeah. And when Anderson Silva also came out and started speaking, a lot of that was on the back of his new agent, Ronaldo, the Brazilian footballer.
Was that confirmed that Ronaldo actually became his agent? Who was Ed Soares? Just his manager?
Ed Soares was the manager, and he's now the co-manager with Ronaldo. Is going to be he's doing his PR basically, and doing his PR management basically.
Surprising.
Shocking, I know, from incredible. Such a svelte young footballer.
But anyway, Mark, let's get to the card anyway itself. And first of all, obviously, the main events. And Dan Stupp of MMAJunkie.com caught up to review last weekend's action and a preview tomorrow night's card, Munoz versus Wyman, and the weekend's card featuring Luke Rockhold versus Tim Kennedy at Strikeforce. Okay, I'm delighted to say that Dan Stupp from MAJunkie.com is on the line. Dan, first of all, obviously it was a massive weekend for the UFC. Have we got any results on buys of pay-per-views, etc. from the weekend?
We usually don't get pay-per-view buys. I know Dave Meltzer reports them, and they're kind of the industry standard. But we did hear the prelims on FX here in the U.S. Scored 1.8 million viewers. And to date, I think they've done something like 37 UFC prelims between Spike TV and FX, and that ranks second out of all of them. So that's got to be a really good sign that the event did well.
So, Dan, pretty much the most anticipated rematch of all time. Did it live up to the hype?
No. I think people were expecting, you know, if nothing else, a longer fight. And, you know, obviously in the first round we got a taste of what Chael did in their first fight, but obviously he made a mistake in the second and Silva made him pay pretty quickly.
And do you think the Mike Dolce diet might have contributed to that, the fact that he was going in heavier this time?
No, I think he just, you know, made a mistake, and against a guy like Silva, you know, he's going to capitalize. I think we saw in the first round with how dominant Sonnen was. And I think, I can't remember if it was one or two judges actually scored it a 10-8 round for him. You know, so he was pretty dominant. He didn't look gassed or anything. So, again, I think he just made a mistake, and Silva capitalized.
Yeah, it was very uncharacteristic, Don, of, you know, Sonnen going with a spinning back fist attempt. Do you think he was, it was something he maybe practiced in preparation for the fight?
But if he did practice it, he didn't practice it enough. it looked pretty sloppy, and I think he did an interview where he said he didn't even really remember doing it. So I'm guessing it was just a heat of the moment thing, and it really probably wasn't something he, you know, going into the fight really intended to try.
And have you guys any news, obviously, in the States about, you know, Scott McQuarrie's talk of him actually appealing to the Nevada State Athletic Commission to overturn the fight because he thought it was a kick to a downed opponent?
Yeah, we talked to Scott yesterday, and you know, he said he's doing it essentially individually. You know, we talked to Mike Roberts, who is Chael's manager, and he said, I've heard nothing about it. Chael isn't responding, but we talked to the Nevada Commission as well, and they said there really isn't, you know, any course for him to appeal. Just the four things you can appeal, you know, it doesn't really qualify in any of those. Plus, I think you'd have a really hard time, you know, arguing that the knee was illegal. Replays show that, for the most, it looked legal, but, I mean, if nothing else, you're going to need definitive proof, and I don't think you're going to find a camera angle that showed that the knee hit, you know, really the chin or the head more than it hit the chest.
Dave Meltzer, I think, said it, that the man who'll beat Anderson Silva will be a high-class wrestler who doesn't get tired, and that's what we thought that Cale Sonnen was. Where do we go from here? Is it Bisping? Is it Munoz?
Well, I think there's a few options now. You know, it wasn't too long ago we were talking about how Anderson had cleaned out the division, but I think, you know, a couple contenders have emerged, and I think they do have those skills that, you know, present him problems. I think Mark Munoz, who's fighting tomorrow night at UFC on the Fuel TV 4, obviously he's right there near a title shot, and, you know, he's a very decorated wrestler, and the guy he's fighting, Chris Weidman, you know, is the same thing. And then I think you can even throw a guy like Michael Bisping into the mix. Yeah. Obviously, he's not a great wrestler, but he has really good takedown defense. And against a guy like Silva, you know, if he can keep it standing, there's danger there. But, you know, he's got, you know, good striking. And, you know, obviously, I think if he fights Silva, someone's getting knocked out. But you got to give Bisping at least a decent chance.
And do you think that it could be the case that, because when you see someone like Cale Sonnen, who's genuinely kind of tried to get the jiu-jitsu and kind of tried to deal with his serious problems with submissions and the triangle, which has always been his downfall, with Vinny Magalhães, did you feel even in the first round that maybe there was a chance that Cale could actually go for the submission? He did go for the spinning back fist.
Yeah, I mean, I think his game plan was probably, you know, to get the takedowns and work from the top and work ground and pound. You know, beyond that, I'm not real sure kind of if, you know, he had added some, you know, submissions to his game and, you know, things like that. But, you know, I think obviously, you know, he had the blueprint in the first fight on how to beat Silva, and, you know, his most important thing was not to make any mistakes like he made in that first fight. And unfortunately, he made a mistake pretty quickly in the second fight.
Obviously, Don, moving on to the rest of the card as well. Kung Lee again defeating Patrick Cote. How impressed were you with Kung Lee's performance?
I've been a fan of his a very long time. When I first really started covering the sport professionally and, you know, was traveling, you know, I loved going to San Jose just because you knew it was going to be a Kung Lee fight.
Yeah.
Obviously, he's 40 years old. He's only been averaging about a fight a year for the past 5 years. So I don't think, you know, there's really any shot of him winning a title or seriously contending. But as we saw in that fight, he can be a very entertaining guy. And, you know, you put him in the number two or three slot on any pay-per-view event, and that's a really solid addition to the card. I know it'd get someone like me to tune in. So
yeah, I definitely agree with you. I think he's great to watch. But moving on as well, there was a very strange decision, obviously, with the, in the featherweight division. Cody McKenzie, I know he stepped into Chad Mendes, but as Dana White said, he said a complete mismatch. But did everyone not expect that beforehand? And it was a very strange fight to have on the card, I thought.
Yeah, I mean, usually I can understand some rationale for why the UFC matchmakers did what they did. In this case, I really see no reason that they booked this fight other than to, you know, maybe give Mendes an easy win and build him up. I mean, I love Cody McKenzie. He's an entertaining fighter. Yeah. He's an entertaining guy. He's a fantastic interview. But he was obviously way in over his head, especially for a guy who was going to the featherweight division for the first time to fight a guy who just fought for the title. It seems like a complete mismatch, and the UFC pretty much, you know, admitted that after the event.
Yeah, strange one to put on. Still in my eyes, and I completely agree with you. Moving to the bantamweight division, Mike Easton had a big win over Ivan Menjivar. Where does this put Mike in the bantamweight division now?
Well, I think we saw, Uriah Faber and Hinnaut Brau, they're going to be fighting for the interim title later this month.
Yeah.
And, you know, before Brau got the fight, you know, a few other names were being mentioned, Michael McDonald and Ivan Menjivar. So I think essentially what this win does for Mike Easton is kind of put him in Menjivar's spot where, you know, once the title picture gets kind of clarified with the interim title fight, and once that winner fights Dominic Cruz, hopefully later this year, I think you have guys like Michael McDonald and Mike Easton who are going to be right there. So yeah. I think, you know, probably only one win away from a shot at the belt.
Yeah, top five sort of contention for the title anyway.
Dan, we saw the end of the UFC career of Tito Ortiz in a fairly emotional fashion with Forrest Griffin doing the Joe Rogan send-off. Is this the end of him? Is he gone, or is he going to be going on a Bob Sapp tour of the world?
No, we've heard guys like, Ken Shamrock and BJ Penn. You know, obviously he's coming out of retirement. Even Chuck Liddell is kind of hinted that maybe he would come back, or Randy Couture might come back. But I think Tito Ortiz, you know, kind of pretty definitively said, look, I'm done. I think he went in with the mindset and knowing that this is absolutely his last fight. And I think more importantly, like, he lost the fight. We scored it in his favor, but obviously it was a very close fight. But it was a performance that he doesn't have to be embarrassed about. For him, it was a pretty good fight. So I think with the satisfaction of knowing, you know, his last fight was a pretty good performance, I don't think we'll see him back. I think he's very happy to kind of hang it up and pursue other things.
And I think, in fairness, it was actually one of the best Tito performances in the last 5 years, really. You know, kind of when you look at it, really, he's had some poor ones, and this was really a comeback for him.
Yeah, you know, the UFC's president, Dana White, after the event, it said that, you know, both those guys looked old and slow. And, you know, I thought it was pretty harsh criticism, especially since he gave them the bonus for fight of the night. So I don't understand, you know, kind of his criticism of that. But, you know, it's just two very evenly matched guys. And, you know, they fought three times and all three of them were super close. So,
and obviously in sorry.
Yeah, he didn't look terrible, but, you know, I think, you know, he's definitely done.
And just on the prelim card as well, Dan, on that, John Alessio lost to Shane Roller. Is there ever going to be a win for John Alessio in the UFC? Because the guy, I actually feel really sorry for him, because he's a really, obviously he had his problems with performance-enhancing drugs in the past, and to be so honest going into the fight about it, and, you know, he's one of the more honest guys in the UFC world. Do you think that's the end of the road for John Alessio in the UFC?
I think so, unless maybe, you know, he gets a spot on a Canadian card, or, you know, they call on him last minute. It's just so unfortunate, because the guy really has a really phenomenal record outside the UFC, and, you know, I think, you know, the average guy outside the UFC probably doesn't stand a chance against him, but, you know, that UFC record's obviously pretty ugly, and, you know, it took a lot for him to get back, and I think that was probably his final chance, so barring a last minute thing or a fight in Canada or some other weird thing like that, yeah, I can't see him getting another shot.
And all right, I think we leave it there with that card. Moving on to tomorrow's card, obviously Munoz and Weidman. I personally think that Weidman's going to, you know, he's actually favoured, I think, as far as I know. I think he could be the next contender for Anderson Silva. Do you go along with this theory?
I don't know. I mean, the fight with Munoz is so close. Obviously, like you said, Weidman is the favourite, a small favourite, which actually surprised me a bit. I'm leaning toward Munoz in this fight, but obviously it's super close. I think if Munoz wins, I think he probably is in line for a title shot. You could make a case for Weidman. I think, you know, if they said that he does get a title shot and he wins impressively, I wouldn't argue with it. It's just, you know, he's still a fairly young guy. He's fairly new in the sport, so I would just hate to see him rush him too quickly. But, I mean, if he beat, you know, or gets the win tomorrow night, I mean, he's essentially knocking off a top contender, so I don't know what other fight you would give him. You don't want him spinning his wheels against lower level guys. And if he knocks off Mark Munoz, then it'd be kind of hard not to give him a title shot.
But the only thing I'd go, Michael Bisping, the fact that I thought he actually beat Chael Sonnen 2-1 in that fight when he stepped in from Mark Munoz. Do you not think, I think there's a perception that, you know, a lot of people obviously don't like Bisping in the States, and he's not a lot of people's favourite person, but do you think there's a bit of a witch hunt against Bisping and that he's not getting his just deserves?
No, I think the UFC has kind of given him opportunities to get in the title picture. We were, I was just looking at his record this morning, and, you know, he's fought a lot of big names, but all his losses are against those big names. Obviously, he's dominant outside of them. I think he needs another big win or two, but just like we saw with Chael Sonnen, even if people dislike him, the UFC understands it's going to sell pay-per-views. Yeah. Like, even if people are tuning in hoping he loses, they're going to tune in. And, you know, I think against a guy like Anderson Silva, you kind of need that good guy, bad guy. And I mean, personally, I think Bisping's a really nice guy, and he gives great interviews. And
you're one of the few.
Very honest and open, but I'm sure the UFC would want to paint him as the bad guy. And against Anderson Silva, that's usually when Anderson Silva gets most fired up and when he puts on his best performances, when, you know, he's kind of facing that quote-unquote bad guy. So hopefully he gets another big win or two, and he does get that shot that seems so elusive to him.
Dan, I feel almost a bit silly asking you this, but when you see someone like Hector Lombard going into, and if he was to take out Tim Boach in impressive fashion, would that be another kind of number one contender possibility, simply under the fact that the UFC fans haven't seen him and the brand doesn't know him yet and would consider him a blank canvas?
Yeah, I mean, the UFC and Dana White have essentially said that, hey, if he wins impressively, he probably will get a title shot. And I mean, you know, he's unbeaten over, 26, 27 fights, so it's kind of hard to argue with that. But you're right, he still kind of is unknown to a lot of casual UFC fans. And I think, in a way, it is a bit of an injustice that, you know, he would come in and get one win and get a title shot when you have guys like Bisping and Munoz and Weidman and Alan Belcher and even Tim Boach, you know, who have put together, you know, quality wins against quality UFC guys, and they're waiting their turn. So, I mean, it's hard to argue with his win streak, but, you know, you can also make the argument, who did those wins come across? And there's not a lot of really big names on there. So,
it's quite unfair.
It's going to be interesting to see what the UFC does. Whatever they do decide to do, you know, they're going to have to put a lot of effort into marketing a fight against Anderson Silva, just because he's so unknown to so many people.
And that basically puts Tim Boach in a lose-lose situation. If he wins, you know, he's coming off one of the best, you know, comeback victories we've ever seen against Yushin Akami. So where do you think he stands in the whole picture? He looks to be, at the moment, at the back of the list of the five guys we've sort of mentioned there.
Yeah, it's tough for him. I think, you know, a win against Hector Lombard would give him kind of the credentials he needs for a title shot, but, you know, we kind of understand he's not the most marketable guy. He's not the most outspoken guy. So I just can't see the UFC giving him a title shot, even if he wins impressively against Lombard, which it's unfortunate for him. I think, you know, if he beats Lombard, you put him in there, you know, with a Bisping or a Belcher or a Weidman or someone else right there and really market the hell out of it. You know, right now they just haven't put much promotional effort behind Boach, and so people just aren't real familiar with him. So I can't see, you know, them putting him in a title shot at this point.
And one other fight in the card just there tomorrow night. One that's sort of sticking out in my mind, the bantamweight fight between TJ Dillashaw and Vaughn Lee. Why do you think they've? I thought this fight might have been on a bigger card because they're two sort of young up and coming guys. Vaughn Lee, especially coming off a big win in Japan.
Yeah, it was a bit sort of. I figured if nothing else, it would at least be a co-headliner for an event of this caliber. Obviously, it's one of the smaller UFC events, but just based on comments on our website and talking to some other writers, I'm happy to hear that people have big expectations for that fight. A lot of people think it'll be fight of the night. And so I think whoever wins that fight, this kind of will be a breakout performance for him, and I think we will see him on bigger cards in the future.
Brilliant.
So, Dan, Strikeforce, Rocco versus Kennedy. Which of the fights? Is it Nate Marquardt's return versus Tyrone Woodley, or is it Rockhold versus Kennedy, which is winning your heart?
I don't know. I like each one for different reasons. I think Rockhold and Kennedy is probably more evenly matched. I know Rockhold's a pretty sizable favorite, but I think it's a really good kind of clash. Not so much a style, just two tough guys who, you know, go about their jobs like workmen. I think it's a very good fight, and for Rockhold, it would be a very marketable win as a champion. So I like that fight. With Marquardt and Woodley, it's going to be very interesting to see how Marquardt handles Woodley's wrestling. You know, he's just completely taken so many guys out of their game. And you know, Marquardt's had a pretty sizable layoff. He's coming back into Zuffa, you know, after kind of a bitter falling out, a year or two ago. I don't know. I think Rockwell Kennedy's the more intriguing matchup. I think it's the better fight. But there's kind of a lot of storylines with Marquardt and Woodley that I think will make it pretty intriguing.
And where, if Rockhold wins this fight, where does he stand? Like, obviously, Zuffa and the company, will he be brought into the UFC, or is it a possibility he could go in and contend with the other guys we've just been talking about in the middleweight division?
I think, unfortunately, he's going to kind of be in limbo with, you know, a guy like their lightweight champion, Gilbert Melendez. You know, they've hinted before that they could move these guys over to the UFC, but the last we heard, they're definitely going to be keeping them in Strikeforce at least until the end of the year. So I think that even if he wins this fight, he has at least probably one more, if not a couple fights in Strikeforce, and that really becomes the issue then. You know, where do you, you know, there's not a whole lot of guys in Strikeforce, and it may take them kind of really going out there and either convincing a guy from the UFC to go over or signing a free agent, but no, there's just not a whole lot of top-level guys and at the middleweight division who the UFC hasn't already signed. So it'll be interesting to see what they do with them.
And, Tom, we have the interesting situation with Nate Marquardt, who's coming off TRT now for the first time. And, you know, kind of coming up against a wrestler like Tyrone Woodley, is this going to be kind of almost decisive, or, you know, kind of for people who are kind of on TRT saying that they need to do this to live and survive, is this going to be kind of a line in the sand saying that TRT is not quite as decisive as we once thought?
Yeah, I mean, I think you pick up a win over a guy like Woodley with the wrestling, and I mean, obviously we know Marquardt can strike. He's got a pretty solid jiu-jitsu game, so I think a win like this, you know, it's kind of unfortunate. If he wins the title, they're going to keep him in Strikeforce, but I think a win over Woodley would prove that Marquardt's ready to come back to the UFC and you know, be one of the more elite guys at welterweight. So it's an interesting fight. It's almost like the more successful he is, if he wins the title, the worse it is for him, because then he's stuck in Strikeforce.
And just one final question, Dan, for you. Pat Healy obviously is a fight at the weekend against an unknown Japanese quantity.
Mizuto Hirota.
Apologies for that. Do you think this puts Pat in the picture? Obviously, he's coming off four straight wins. Do you think this puts him in the picture for a lightweight title shot against Gilbert Melendez?
Yeah, I think the Strikeforce officials are definitely have their fingers crossed that not only does he win, but, you know, he wins very convincingly. You know, he's beaten some very solid guys, Fodor, Maximo Blanco, Beerbohm. So, I mean, the resume's there. You know, you can argue that he's not the most marketable guy, but I think within the lightweight division, he's without a doubt one of the most credible opponents. He's for a guy like Melendez who needs top-level guys to fight.
Yeah.
He's an Irish background. Of course he's promotable, Dan. Come on. Listen, guys. Dan, thanks a million for joining us. I really appreciate it, as always.
Thanks, Dan.
No problem. Thank you, guys.
And everyone, log on to MMAJunkie.com. Top quality MMA website. Cheers, Dan.
Thanks.
Dan.
What was your breakdown of the fight?
Well, it was one of those things that last time around, 2 years ago, a younger Cale Sonnen, there was a situation where Cale Sonnen was the man who won the golden ticket and Charlie in the Chocolate Factory, and he caught Anderson Silva on a really bad day. He had bad ribs, and he was having a really, really good day, where he trained perfectly, he was the right weight, and he managed to go 5 rounds and fight him to the ground. He won every round, but he got caught, like he does every time. And Cale Sonnen, throughout his career, has always been prone to the exact same thing.
Exact same things happened to him in all his most of his losses. But do you feel that Chael, and I know I've said this a certain amount as well, Chael, you know, did he go out all guns blazing? Like, is that what we want to see in Chael? Do we want to see a bit more of a scientific approach, more clever when he's on the ground? Because, you know, you could see that. I remember watching the fight 2 years ago, and I think, you know, I think Chael should have got an instant rematch. Didn't. He had to fight 2 or 3 more times. And there is a case for a lot of people on Chael at the start saying Anderson Silva did dodge him, because that was clearly worthy of a rematch if I've ever seen one. But Chael is a bit naive on the ground at times. I know we've obviously said it. But is he a bit too relentless when he goes into positions on the ground and doesn't think? Because you could see the whole fight, till the triangle came on in that 5th round, that Silva had always control of one of his wrists.
Yeah,
and that's one of the most crucial things when you're putting on a triangle, if he's wrist control, no, especially from the back.
You're bang on, Noel. The fact is that Cale did not finish it, and he was in a powerful position. He was in his strongest position for the entire time. He didn't enforce it, and he didn't finish the fight. And whether it's a lack of power, whether it's a lack of precision, whatever it is, he can't spend that amount of time in complete control of his opponent and not finish it and still expect to be the champion. And, like, you know, Cale has famously said on numerous occasions, he's never lost a round. That's probably quite true, barring Michael Bisping.
Yes.
But he doesn't lose rounds. He gets more punches in. The fact that those punches sometimes don't have the same impact, that's also a factor.
Where does Cale go from here? What do you think? I think, like, there's talk there today. I've seen on Twitter people talking about him retiring. There's been a lot of bullshit passed around. Let's be quite frank about it. And we obviously talked to Dan earlier on about, you know, his coach, Scott McQuarrie, talking about the fact that they might make appeal for a legal head kick to the ground. It wasn't a legal head kick. Let's be honest. I think
one replay showed
that and the short pulling, all this sort of thing. You know, one replay showed it, and I think, you know, Chael was quite dignified, very dignified, to be honest. I think Anderson was actually made more of a twat of himself afterwards from what he said, asked him to a barbecue. It's just like, who are you?
No, you're absolutely right. Like, you know, Chael, the character, and I think, like, you know, any sensible kind of MMA fans can separate the fact that, like, you know, Chael, the character, selling the fight is a different person to Chael, the person post-fight. And Chael, the person post-fight, is an incredibly likeable bloke, and it's quite strange. But, like, you know, kind of when his coach came out and said that you know, kind of there could be a possible kind of call for a rematch or problems because of the knee, that's absolute bullshit. The fact is that possibly, you know, him rubbing the Vaseline onto his chest, you know, kind of that's a problem. That was a mistake. Cale didn't care about it. He's old school. The pulling of the shorts, Cale didn't care about it. He's old school. You know, screw it. It happened, but it's not important. The fight is over. Cale's let it go. Kale is a sportsman.
He's got to move on.
He's got to move on. And yeah. Do you know where he's going to move on? He's going to move on to Belfort, or he's going to move on to Wanderlei Silva. I don't know why, but I just feel he's going to take on the Brazilians further.
I wouldn't be surprised if he does. You know, Chael, he's a funny guy. But obviously, moving on to you know, other fights in the card. I know you've strong opinions on Griffin Ortiz, and you know, I think it ended Griffin win 2-1, and there was a lot of talk obviously against, you know, Ortiz winning 2-1, but I'm going to be honest and say I thought Griffin won 2-1, and to be honest, I did think Griffin's you know, reaction with the microphone stuff was a bit petty and stupid, and he shouldn't have gone down that route. But you know, what can you do? Sometimes when like Griffin sort of grabs, likes to grab the headlines a bit, really, doesn't he?
Like Griffin's a space cadet. Like, kind of, he's
a good guy, though.
He's a good guy. Like, you know, kind of, he's one of those bizarre characters that, like, you know, people still see him as kind of ultimate fighting
That's
champion.
It, yeah.
You know, kind of, he's like, you know, people who don't know anything about kind of UFC still see him as that young kind of 21-year-old who's kind of, you know, entering and kind of, you know, against that Bonner fight.
He's a long
kind
way
of,
past
and
that
it's
now.
Always going to be there. Mm. But Tito had a great fight against him. It was a fight which I went into with no expectations.
I'd agree with what you said. You said to Dan earlier on, and we love the Dan interview now on in a while, but you said to Dan earlier on that, you know, you thought it was Tito, one of Tito's best fights in his last 3 or 4. And I completely agree. I think, you know, Tito, he went out, he stood up, you know, he took everything that came against him, and, you know, he put up a very good performance. But I thought Forrest did actually take it 2-1. And I think Forrest, you know, I think Forrest sort of looked up to Tito as an icon, which sort of gave him a kick in the arse a little bit. But, you know, I thought Forrest took it at the end of the day, so I'm not too.
It's more the fact that, like, you know, Forrest could be so, I don't know if he's undignified at the end. I don't know if it's undignified or is it just foolishness, or is it just lack of thought or concussions, or what is it? But, you know, kind of that running out of the ring and being pulled back by Dana, it just seems insane. But, like, you know, to try and pull the Rogan roll on Tito,
you're not getting away with that.
You're not getting away with
that. I thought too much was made of it, but in fairness,
no, absolutely,
it's his last fight. Tito did sort of milk a bit, but Tito's that kind of guy, I think. You know,
well, Tito's a milker. You know,
yes,
be
that's it. But we don't need something else.
We don't continue that one. Yeah.
But moving on, obviously, because it was it was just a cheerio fight, really. Moving on to Kung Lee, Patrick Cote. I thought Kung Lee was very good in the fight. Took some big shots, reacted well.
He's 40 years of age now.
Oh, well, he said that.
Do you know that?
But, you know, Kung, this is a guy I really, really like. And, you know, he's had 11 fights now. And that was 9-3, I think he is now, after beating Cote. Obviously, Cote coming back into the UFC. But I thought Kung Lee, you know, dealt with everything he was put upon him.
He looked incredible as well.
For a guy of his age, we'll say it again, very good. And I can't understand why people aren't, you know, talking about this guy as a possible contender in the top five. You've guys like Weidman, Munoz, Bisping. Why isn't he up there with these guys? You know, he's proved himself in Strikeforce. And I know he lost to Silva, and it was a sort of strange fight. Silva had to come back. I think Silva, obviously, a lot of people might disagree with this, but I think Silva's been very poor in the UFC compared to his record in Pride, and he's only had one or two good fights in the UFC. And Kung Lee did, it was one of Silva's better fights in the UFC, and he obviously beat him, but Kung Lee had a very impressive performance in that fight as well.
Well, I think there was just a simple kind of, you know, step up in preparation this time around. And when you looked at Kung Lee, his body looked firmer, he looked stronger, he looked healthier and fitter, and he looked prepared.
Yeah, he looked a little bit too heavy, I think. Oh, he put on too much weight.
He didn't look prepared for the Wanderlei fight. Yeah. Like, you know, he didn't look
right.
Tired. Yeah.
If you saw him after this fight interview, he was out of breath.
He looked healthy.
He still
though.
Looked healthy.
Yeah,
he looked a lot healthier and he was speaking on the mic, and
he looked like he'd had his diet prepared right and trained right.
But what do you think? Do you agree with me he should be considered in the top six now at this stage?
Well, I think he should, but I think he's been patronised by the UFC, and by Goldberg and Rogan, I think, are And I'm not saying the script there down yeah. for him, but I think this whole kind of, you know, playing him out as the 40-year-old fighting for the kind of the old guys out there. I think this guy is an incredibly talented fighter and he could actually have an impact. And people want to see him fight because yeah. he has more style and flair.
He's a huge draw for the UFC.
Absolutely.
Huge draw.
And if you put his name on a billboard, it will still yeah. draw.
He's just on a movie, what, Dragon Eyes with Jean-Claude Van Damme, so...
He could be Bruce Lee, baby.
Yeah, Bruce Lee, baby. Okay, getting on to our next port of call. Chad Mendes versus Cody McKenzie. Chad Mendes, Cody McKenzie. Are you serious? Sorry. That fight before, like, it was even announced, like, the most ridiculous fight I've ever seen. This guy is coming off a loss to Jose Aldo, the featherweight champion of the world in the UFC, and he's to go fight a guy like Cody McKenzie. I know they train together all this sort of malarkey. In fairness, what are the UFC thinking by putting that fight together? I don't care what Joe Silva says. Dana White quoted saying it was a complete mismatch. It was always going to be one of the biggest mismatches in UFC history. Am I not right?
No, you're absolutely wrong. Shapers, you say that with such confidence, but you don't understand. This is Cody McKenzie, lad. He has 11 victories with the guillotine. The Cody McKenzie guillotine. And he is Ronda Rousey, the mistress of the armbar in his corner. He is the man. And he could have won that fight anytime he wanted. He just... kind of might have lost it pretty glamorously. Yeah, no, it was a complete mismatch from moment one. It was clear that it was to give Chad Money Mendes a fight which he knew he was going to win, and it was to give him a way back in the UFC, and he got that.
But the thing that annoys me is the fact, right, that Mendes is obviously, he lost to Aldo, he's the last person to lose to Aldo, and he gets a fight like that. He's gone from top of the division to, literally, I'm not taking the piss, bottom of the division. No, like, what's that all about? Like,
it was a friendly match. It was a friendly match. It was a match which...
There's no friendly matches in UFC.
Is the thing that we say this, but this was a
Joe
match
Silva
which he got to...
Joe
Silva should be hanging his head in shame, but honest, Mendes got to show off his skills. He had someone who he'd already beaten the crap out of in training, and yeah. he beat the crap out of him.
Is that the reason why the UFC put this fight together? Because the two guys trained together and there was a little bit of a spiel between them? I don't think so, personally, because there's that much of a gulf in class between these two guys that I think Chad Mendes would run away with it 9 times out of 10.
Well, no, when you have a situation when, like, you know, kind of the entire media is all focused on the fact that Ronda Rousey is in Cody McKenzie's corner fight. When you have the entire media just kind of go, no, Jesus, it's Ronda Rousey. It's Ronda Rousey, the superstar. Wow. You know,
but to be honest, I hope Ronda does well, because Misha Tate actually completely showed me up in an interview one day. So
she's not a friend of yours.
She wasn't a friend of mine. And I was very nice to the girl. And the whole Brian Caraway thing is true, by the way. Just go with that. She does promote his fights, and she asked me to promote them, and she wouldn't even do the interview, so let's put it out there. Well, I don't care. You be honest with me, I'll be honest with you, and that's the way it's going to work.
Here, this is a Ronda Rousey podcast, clearly through and through.
It's not at all. And you know that. I told you earlier about that.
I jest. But no, the fact is that Mendes did have a fight which he knew he was going to win, and he knew how to win, and he had the road mapped down already.
But it makes no odds for him, though. And on the UFC, it's a completely stupid fight to put on.
It's a question.
Okay, we'll just leave it at that, I think.
Yeah, sorry, you're getting angry. I'm trying to defend it. It's not working. You're just angrier. Let's go on to the next fight.
Let's go on to tomorrow night's cards. Obviously, Mark Munoz and Chris Weidman. Seriously, I think the two of these guys are, and I know a lot of people, obviously, they're two that we talked to Dan earlier on, and he agrees there's a few guys in this division that are, you know, contenders for the title. I think if Wyman wins tomorrow, and I think he will win tomorrow, I think he is favourite, and I think he will win. And I'm just, you know, it's a wide open division at the moment, but you've been paying players like that, and you know how it's a fucking mad division, guys. Sorry, I'm not going to beat her in the bush. It's just, you don't even know what to say about this division anymore, because there's so many guys competing for that, you know, first place after Sonnen. Sonnen probably shouldn't have even been first. title contender because he lost to Bisping, let's be honest about it. Two rounds to one.
Oh, no, we're going to have a fight about this.
No, but listen, he did lose 2-1. Yeah, I love Chael.
Are you questioning the score? Are you questioning the judges in UFC?
Nah, sure.
For God's sake.
Man.
No, but let's be serious about this. Can you make a question of it? Kael Sonnen and Anderson Silva are the two best people in their division. There's no question, there's no reason for a third match. Anderson Silva's going to go on.
But as I've always said, why did it take so long to get a second match going? Did Silva duck him or what?
Oh, of course he ducked him. But like,
because he should have got an instant rematch after his performance in the first fight.
Like,
he'd fight two other guys before.
Here, don't make me go into a diatribe of Kael Sonnenisms and
okay, we know that. Yeah, okay, we won't go.
The largest arms, and the greatest charms, and
we'll talk about Weidman and Munoz. Yeah,
yeah. The fact is that Munoz and Weidman. Weidman's a strong favourite, and you'd wonder which of them actually has more right to say that they have a more of a chance taking on Anderson Silva, and. Wildman is the one who kind of...
Wildman or Weidman?
Weidman. There's an awful pronunciation error in my lifestyle. But, you know, kind of it's one of those things that, like, you know, kind of Weidman, he has the ability to actually take him down.
I think he's quality. I think he's a good fighter.
It's one of those things. It's hard to see anyone after Kael. After Kael lost in the way that he did, it's hard to see anyone kind of, you know, taking down Anderson Silva and actually beating him. But some would have said Munoz was the one, but I'm a bit disillusioned, Niall. I'm sorry. I'm a bit disillusioned with the prospects. Division. With the prospects of the division.
What if Rashad Evans drops down?
But see, that's the golden ticket, and that's the kind of the big kind of, you know, kind of laughing
thing
in front
of us. People talking about this, I think if Silva would meet GSP at a catchweight, even, like, do you know what I mean? Like, just drop down one instead of John Jones. He's nothing to gain by the John Jones thinks he's stepping up a weight.
Yeah.
It makes no sense. If he drops down, you know, a few pounds, meets him at catchweight, meets him at welterweight. I think it'd be a good fight. Do you know what I mean?
But I don't think he's after the two guys.
There's nothing else in that division that's going to appeal to him. There's nothing else in that division that's going to appeal to him. So where is he going to go? It has to be something to go out in a high of his career, end at something good, not like at the weekend. He could have done that, but you know, he said he'll go for 10 years yet. I can't see that happening. Realistically. But if he dropped it, to be honest, I can see Conor beating GSP anyway, because GSP hasn't fought in 2 years.
That's a fair argument. But I think you're dead right in the fact, but I genuinely think that Anderson Silva doesn't go out looking for, he's a martial artist, he doesn't go out looking for excitement, he looks to go out and win fights. He looks to go out and win them. He wants to cement his legacy, he wants his career to be remembered in a certain way. And, like, you know, kind of, it's one of those things which I do vaguely kind of agree with Kael Sonnen in the fact that it is complete and utter bollocks in trying to cement one's legacy. Because, like, you know, kind of one's legacy, you know, kind of, you're paid to do your job, go out there, beat the shit out of whoever's in the octagon in front of you and do it, you know, kind of, and that's it. And if it's at your weight, you know, kind of, you're at the same weight, fucking let's get it on, you know, kind of, that's it.
Exactly, yeah.
But I just can't see him taking on St. Pierre. I just don't think that he... I know he'd be stepping down in weight, but I can't see him taking the risk. I don't know why.
That's what I think about Silva. I think his career's been all about risks. And
absolutely.
Know, and he'll drop, he'll go up, he won't go down, who fucking knows. But anyway, let's move on. And I think, to be honest with you, one of the most exciting fights, and I said this to Dan earlier on, I can't believe it's on it's on a Fuel TV undercard, and it's on the main card, I think. Yeah, TJ Dillashaw versus Vaughn Lee.
And it's Vaughn hidden.
It's you know, these guys are two of the best up and coming young fighters in the division. This is one of the fights that should be on a pay-per-view easily, on like fourth or fifth fight in the pay-per-view on the main card. I just can't understand. These two guys are, Dillashaw proved him the ultimate fighter, he's a quality fighter. Vaughn Lee had an awesome victory in Japan against Mzaki, what was it, Edgar Maynard in Japan? Yeah.
Yeah.
And it was, Edgar Henderson.
Sorry.
In Japan. And Vaughn Lee had an awesome performance there. And, you know, this guy, these two guys are two of the best young fellas at this weight class, the bantamweight division. And really, they should be on a better card. What are your views on that, Mark?
No, you're absolutely right to promote it. It's one of those things that it's hidden away, and it's almost criminal the fact that it's on a Fuel TV card, which only the most hardcore of the hardcore fan is going to see. And, you know, kind of...
We'll all see it again.
No, we'll both see it. And this is the awful thing that, like, you know, kind of, we'll see it and their careers will be moved on nada because of it. You know, kind of, because we would have seen it anyway if it was on a Facebook prelim. You know, kind of, and that's a question. It? You know, kind of, what's the point of it? And, you know, kind of, the Fuel TV, you know, kind of, until the reach of it is kind of, you know, until Fuel has expanded and kind of, you know, its reach is kind of, you know, stretched and its power is stronger. I speak of it as if it's some sort of kind of super kind of force throughout the world. But it is not a global channel yet. And until it is, you know, the Fuel TV broadcasts aren't going to be as exciting to people. And
I agree, but I still think there's a lot of fights you could put on, you know, on a pay-per-view card. Like, I think that could be, you know, a main card, you know, lower ranked event on a pay-per-view card. But that's no one listens to me when they're talking fights. Whoever puts, obviously Joe Silva put together Cody McKenzie and Chad Mendes. Sorry, even all week I've been laughing at that fight. I think it's a disgrace that the fight was put on a main card of a UFC pay-per-view.
You're absolutely right.
It's an absolute shocking fight to put on, because McKenzie is never, ever, ever going to be at the level of Chad Mendes.
But Niall, can we get to the most important point of the fact that, like, for the last... since the Fox deal has been signed... Mm. The UFC hasn't been giving it the proper, the respect it deserves. And hence, when it came to the primetime special, it wasn't picked up by Fox. Mm. You know, kind of, so it was chucked on Fuel TV. We have a situation now where we want big fights going on
the whole time.
The Fox network.
You see, we're two, it's different for us because we're two of the guys.
Because we're going to hunt it down anyway.
In this country, we're going to hunt it down and watch it anyway. You know, you're going to watch the fight tomorrow night. I'm going to watch the fight tomorrow night. We'll get it somehow.
Yeah.
We're not saying where we'll get it. We'll watch the fight somehow. It's not on TV.
We'll steal it from a child on the street.
No,
I
wouldn't
go that far. That'd be harsh.
But, you know, we will. We're the hardcore group of fans here. But still, you know, things need to be done to promote the sport more within, you know, Europe, especially, I think. Strikeforce is doing well. We've Cage Warriors here. We've Conor McGregor here from usually from down around the corner, who's the first ever major mixed martial arts champion from Ireland. So, you know, I think Conor should be seriously considered for a UFC contract soon. I think he will, because a lot of rumours going around that Conor will, because he won the lightweight title there a few weeks ago in Dublin at Cage Warriors. I think it was 54, I'm not too sure. But, you know, guys like this, we need to promote the sport, get it going in Europe. It's obviously getting way bigger in the UK, but I think here there's a huge loophole. The media just do not want to know anything about mixed martial arts. And if pisses me off beyond belief, and I won't even get into it now.
Second.
Because you look, the biggest combat sport event in the world, last Saturday, one of my friends was over at it, on this honeymoon, Amir, hope you had a great honeymoon, he was at the event, I was chatting to him, and, you know, it's not covered by any, not one single, I scour the papers every day in the sports page, was not one newspaper.
Oh, but the greatest moment of all, when you tune into Cage Side on Sky Sports, where it's all of a sudden, well, what's going on this weekend? Well, there's a fight in Sheffield, but that's pretty much it. You know, kind of nothing else going on. It's not going on here. It's not going on there.
But obviously, okay, we'll get over our UFC thing now at the moment. And we'll move on to Strikeforce, because Strikeforce have a massive event at the... Where is it on, sorry? Where is it on?
It is the Rose Garden, Portland, United States.
Sorry, the Rose Garden in Portland, United States. And obviously, Kennedy and Rockhold will headline that, with obviously Rockhold being the strike force middleweight champion. So how can you see that going? Both these guys are, I think, personally, two very underrated fighters in the middleweight division in, you know, the whole of the sport.
Well, like, Rockhold's an amazing, amazing fighter, and he's 9-1. Like, the big question is, he's coming off TRT now, you know, kind of, so it's something which is also going to come up for Neymar Grodd later when we're talking about it, but, like, you know, kind of, it's going to be a fascinating fight, because Tim Kennedy is really going to bring it to him, you know, kind of, he's 14-3 now, you know, kind of, but he might have the answer to the question.
But Rockhold's got to be the favourite going into
this
fight.
Oh, no, absolutely, without question, no.
Yeah, it's. I tell you what, it's a bloody good card that they've got going there. They actually have Nate Marquardt and Tyron Woodley as well, which is a, you know, Nate's coming back off.
He's been a year out.
A year out, yeah. After his TRT replacement. You know? Oh, he doesn't need it anymore. Yeah, the same old thing that we always hear.
Fascinating, isn't it? Like, you can die if you don't.
Can you? Yeah.
But I don't know.
We hear new news every day in this thing, but. Obviously, Marquardt, it's a massive opportunity for him to get. Like, he's obviously back under Zuffa, so you can read how much you want into if Zuffa re-employ their fighters after messing up once or twice. But they clearly
Are excited about Marquardt. Like,
yeah,
like,
I think so.
There's a buzz about him, you know, kind of. And I think it's when he's taken away from us for a while.
But to be honest, mate, I've no buzz about the guy. I think he's sort of mid-table. Sort of guy that's, you know, as Dan was saying earlier on, like, he reckons Bisping's like that. I don't think Bisping. I think Bisping's a bit up more than that.
Yeah.
But I think Marquardt is at that level, middle of the road, doesn't know where he's going, where he'll, you know, go up or down, like his.
I think you're right. I think he's overrated by the fact that he's been away.
So. But not even that. But I always thought he was. You know, when I think Chael beat him up pretty bad. And
yeah, when the Chael storm's flying, you know.
Yeah. Well, that's it. But you know, we'll have to. You know,
when he comes up against a top wrestler like Tyron Woodley, it's going to be a big test.
I think
him.
It's a big problem for tomorrow night or Saturday night. Sorry.
Damn tomorrow. Right.
Okay, we'll just leave it at that. I think.
Yeah. Sorry, you're getting angry. I'm trying to defend it. It's not working. You're just angrier. Let's go on to the next fight.
Let's go on to tomorrow night's card. Obviously, Mark Munoz and Chris Weidman. Seriously, I think the two of these guys are, and I know a lot of people, obviously, they're two of the. We talked to Dan earlier on, and he agrees there's a few guys in this division that are, you know, contenders for the title. I think if Weidman wins tomorrow, and I think he will win tomorrow, I think he is favourite, and I think he will win. And I'm just, you know, it's a wide open division at the moment, but you've base paying players like that, and you know how it's a fucking mad division, guys. Sorry, I'm not going to beat around the bush. It's just, you don't even know what to say about this division anymore, because there's so many guys competing for that, you know, first place after Sonnen probably shouldn't have even been first title contender, because he lost to Bisping, let's be honest about it. Rounds to one.
Oh no, we're going to have a fight about this.
No, but listen, he did lose 2-1. Yeah, I love Chael.
Are you questioning the score? Are you questioning the judges in UFC?
Nah, sure.
For God's sake.
Man.
No, but let's be serious about this. Can you make a question of it? Chael Sonnen and Anderson Silva are the two best people in their division. There's no question, there's no reason for a third match. Anderson Silva's going to go on.
But as I've always said, why did it take so long to get a second match going? Did Silva duck him, or what's
going on? Of course he ducked him. But like,
because he should have got an instant rematch after his performance in the first fight.
But like, you know, kind of,
he'd fight two other guys before.
Here, don't make me go into a diatribe of Kael Sonnenisms and.
Okay, we know that. Yeah, okay, we won't go.
The largest arms and the greatest charms and.
We'll talk about Weidman and Munoz. Yeah.
Yeah, the fact is that Munoz and Weidman's a strong favourite, and you'd wonder which of them actually has more right to say that they have a more of a chance taking on Anderson Silva. And Wildman is the one who kind of...
Wildman or Wideman?
Wideman. There's an awful pronunciation error in my lifestyle. But, you know, kind of it's one of those things that, like, you know, kind of Wideman, he has the ability to actually take him down.
I think he's quality. I mean, he's a good fighter.
It's one of those things. It's hard to see anyone after Kale. After Kale lost in the way that he did, it's hard to see anyone kind of, you know, taking down Anderson Silva and actually beating him. But some would have said Munoz was the one, but I'm a bit disillusioned, Niall. I'm sorry. I'm a bit disillusioned with the prospects. Division. With the prospects of the division.
What if Rashad Evans drops down?
But see, that's the golden ticket, and that's the kind of the big kind of, you know, kind of laughing thing in front of us.
People talking about this, I think if Silva would meet GSP at a catchweight, even, look, do you know what I mean? Like, just drop down one instead of John Jones. He's nothing to gain with the John Jones thinks he's stepping up a weight.
Yeah.
It makes no sense. If he drops down, you know, a few pounds, meets him at catchweight, meets him at welterweight. I think it'd be a good fight. Do you know what I mean?
But like, no, but like, I don't think he's after the two guys.
I don't think he is either.
He's after, like,
but there's nothing else in that division that's going to appeal to him.
There's one thing. Right? There's one thing which should drive.
Hang on, one second. Just
of course.
There's nothing else in that division that's going to appeal to him. So where is he going to go? It has to be something to go out in a high of his career, end at something good, not like at the weekend. He could have done that, but you know. He said he'll go for 10 years yet. I can't see that happening, well, realistically. Not. But if he dropped it... To be honest, I can see Conor beating GSP anyway. Because GSP hasn't fought in 2 years.
That's a fair argument. But I think you're dead right in the fact. But I genuinely think that Anderson Silva doesn't go out looking for... He's a martial artist. He doesn't go out looking for... excitement. He looks to go out and win fights. He looks to go out and... win them. He wants to cement his legacy. He wants his career to be remembered in a certain way. And, like, you know, it's one of those things which I do vaguely kind of agree with Kyle Sullivan in the fact that it is complete and utter bollocks in trying to cement one's legacy, because, like, you know, kind of one's legacy, you know, kind of you're paid to do your job, go out there, beat the shit out of whoever's in the octagon in front of you and do it, you know, kind of, and that's it. And if it's at your weight, you know, kind of, you're at the same weight, fucking let's get it on. You're not going to, that's it.
Exactly, yeah.
But I just can't see him taking on St. Pierre. I just don't think that he... I know he'd be stepping down in weight, but I just can't see him taking the risk. I don't know why.
That's what I think about Silva. I think his career has been all about risks.
And absolutely.
Know, and he'll drop, he'll go up, he won't go down. Who fucking knows? And we'll move on to Strikeforce. Pat Healy, what can we say? He's facing off against Mzuta Hirota this weekend. But if Pat Healy wins, he's in a fantastic position to be considered as the number one contender for Gilbert Melendez's crown. Pat, he's gone 5-1. The guy, you know, I think personally he deserves a title shot against Gilbert Melendez. And listen, you can hear what the guy thinks himself, because we caught up earlier on today. Pat Bam Bam Healy, take it away, man. All right, Pat, obviously being a Team Quest member, first of all, what did you make of the card at the weekend, UFC 148, and how disappointed were you with the result?
Man, I thought it was a great card. You know, I always enjoy watching Kung Lee fight, and, you know, some of the other fights were good, too. It's a little disappointing to see Chell lose, definitely. You know, all in all, it was a good card. And, man, you got to respect Anderson. He's definitely, I would say, the pound-for-pound best in the world.
Yeah, definitely. Completely agree. Obviously, Pat, before we get talking about your fight, obviously, you've clear links to Ireland. Whereabouts are your roots from?
You know, I'm not that... positive. My aunt is really up on that stuff, but I know it's from the South Ireland there, I wish I knew more about it, to be honest.
Well, Pat, you're coming with 4 straight wins since your loss to Josh Thompson, taking a record to 5-1 in the light in the lightweight division. How much do you know about your opponent, Mzuta Hirota?
You know, I know a fair amount about him, you know, with him fighting a lot in Japan. There's always a lot of stuff on YouTube or the internet where I was able to watch a lot of film. He's a good quick hands, you know, good movement. He's done really well against, guys who have my type of style, kind of the guys who want to get him on his back and beat him up. So he's definitely a really dangerous opponent, and I think it'll make for a great fight.
And how's the camp been going? What have you been working on ahead of this fight?
I've been working, a lot of the same stuff I normally do, you know, wrestling and grappling, but I've really been working hard on my Muay Thai, more so on my clinch, you know, the knees, the elbows. I've always felt like, that would fit in well with my style, and, I was lucky that we got a couple of guys at Team Quest who spent a lot of time in Thailand recently, and they just kind of came back right before my fight, so I was able to work with them, and I feel really, really sharp in the clinch with my knees and elbows and kind of controlling that position.
And obviously, Pat, in your last fight against Karis Fodor, you submitted him and ended his previous unbeaten record. How pleased were you with that performance against one of the top young fighters in the Strikeforce lightweight division?
I was pretty happy with it, I think I did what I had to do to win, kept the pressure on him. I think I broke him mentally. I could see, in between the second and third round, he had his head down. He was visibly frustrated. So that's always a good feeling when you feel like you can break a guy. I was anytime you get the finish too, that's a big thing. You never want to leave it up to the judges, and everybody likes a finish.
Yeah, and obviously, in your last two bouts, your ground game has been absolutely superb. Where are you looking to take this fight, and how do you think it could finish?
I think I'm going to be looking to do the same type of thing I normally do. Put him against the cage, put him on his back, wear him down with pressure. But I definitely hope to finish him, and think I'll finish him in the second round and overwhelm him either with the strikes or a submission.
And in your last two fights as well, especially against Blanco and Fodor, obviously they were your last two fights, but you overcame early adversity in the fights. How pleased were you to bounce back and still hang in the fight? Because you seem to have a chin of steel, but some of the shots you took in that fight, and the head kick, I think, against Blanco you took was a pretty big shot, and you still managed to get the victory in the second round.
Yeah, anytime you can kind of come back, obviously I would have liked to get off to a better start, but every time you come back from a little adversity, it does give you a little bit more confidence. And I feel like I'm so much bigger than those guys at 155. Yeah. That it's really going to take a lot to hurt me or put me out. Obviously I don't want to put myself in that situation to take a lot of punishment, but being a lot bigger, I think that helps in that aspect.
And what are you walking around at the moment? Do you have much weight to cut this week?
Nah, actually, I get it. I diet down really good, and each time it seems to be getting easier and easier. So I think by the time I actually have to cut the water weight, it's only going to be about 6 pounds. So it's going to be like one cut, pretty easy. But I put a lot of weight back on, I think doing it the right way with my diet and staying focused there, it makes me perform a lot better.
What sort of diet are you on? Are you working with Mike Dolce?
I was telling somebody yesterday, I don't like to use this word, but I like to steal a lot of Dolce.
No, because I saw something on Twitter, basically there was sort of someone linking you with Mike Dolce, and I wasn't too sure if it was true, because I've done a bit of research and I didn't really see anything coming up, but I just thought I'd ask.
Yeah, I haven't actually worked with him. I know him, and he's, I've known him for years. He used to train at Team Quest, and we do talk, and I like to, he does the Q&As on Twitter. Will he answer anybody's questions? So I'm always posing questions to him. And, Chell Sonnen uses him a lot, and I've known Chell for years, so I've I've got a lot from what Chell does with him, and you know, I got his books and just got his cookbook. I just, you know, I love his stuff, and you know, it feels like you know,
I've won
he doesn't stop on the flavor.
I have a copy of it in my bag, living lean.
Your skill set has really been evolving towards the latter part of your career. How happy are you with your all round game at the moment?
I'm pretty happy, you know, and you know, one thing I've always neglected is my stand up and you know, after the Fodor performance, I was like, man, I have got to start working on my stand up as much as I work on my ground. And you know, I really did that for this fight. I've really been focused on working it, and I'm not going to change my style,
yeah.
But you know, I definitely want to be sharper, especially in that aspect.
Yeah, and especially with it, I noticed on your last two fights, you seem to go in instead of closing down the angles, and you know, but I think it makes for an exciting fighter. It sort of goes which is you can take the shots, you know. But obviously Gilbert Melendez, if you win this fight, are you thinking about him down the road?
Oh yeah, definitely. I you know, after I win this fight, I would definitely want that title shot. I think I'm the one man in line for it.
Yeah.
You know, nobody else has a series of wins in Strikeforce like I do, and I feel like I definitely, with a win Saturday, deserve it.
Is there anyone else in your eye line? Do you want the Josh Thompson rematch?
You know, I would definitely like the Josh Thompson rematch, but you know, I'd like it to be my first title defense.
You want the title defense, absolutely.
Well, listen, thanks a million, Pat, on it. And his fight is obviously on this Saturday, Strikeforce, Rockhold versus Kennedy at the Rose Garden Arena in Portland, Oregon.
It's a great card.
Well, interesting words there from Pat Healy. Clearly, he thinks he deserves a title shot against Gilbert Melendez should he win this Saturday at Strikeforce. Luke Rockhold versus Tim Kennedy. Mark, what are your opinions on that?
Well, he's the ultimate underdog, but he's on a win streak of four fights in a row now, and he's on the road to it.
Yeah, but he's clearly gone. Like he's done so well since he dropped the lightweight. He's 5-1 now in Strikeforce. So, as we said earlier on, I really hope he gets a title shot because he does deserve it. He did so well against Thompson, came up short, and you know who else out there in you know Strikeforce is to face off against them. Against Gilbert Melendez.
No, he's got the credentials. You're damn right. He's got the credentials.
You have to look at guys like this, and I think you know Pat Healy's a quality fighter, very very good fighter. So
he can have his first title defense against Josh Thompson, and should be okay.
I'd love to see it.
And that's the fight we want to see.
That's what we want to see, big time, because you know the Irish heritage and stuff. And Pat, absolute gentleman. I'd love to see him. You know, do well again, and does a bit of word that Pat might be coming over to some seminars here. Is that correct?
He is an Irishman in disguise. He wants to come home.
Pat was talking about possibly doing a seminar or two over here, obviously in mixed martial arts. So anyone who wants to get in contact with the show, and contact us at www.talkingbrawls@gmail.com or at Twitter at talkingbrawls. At Talking Brawls. On Twitter. Or at Noel McGrath. And Mark, what's your handle?
It's Mark Moriarty 101.
So guys, listen as well. Channel that I've been a part on, obviously love football and stuff as well. You can find us at www.talkingbrawls.net, at talkingbrawls.pod on Twitter, and Facebook.com/talkingbrawls. And guys, listen, hopefully next week we'll have on, I'm not even joking, a massive show, Mark, and you know,
I'm excited. I'm actually physically jumping up and down.
And we've done lined up. So listen, tune in if you liked what you heard tonight. So I guarantee you, two of these guys that we have on next week, well, scheduled for next week, are two of the biggest names in MMA, and I guarantee you will be delighted. So listen, thanks a million, guys, for tuning in. For myself and Mark Moriarty and everyone at TalkingBrawls.net and Talking Brawls and the whole shebang. Have a good weekend. All right,
thanks,
cheers,
everybody.
Guys. Thank you. Enjoy the card tomorrow night.